It's All Things Considered on WNYC. Here with the latest installment of The Docket is our senior race and justice editor, Jamie Floyd.
Election Day is next week, and President Trump has made it clear that he may only accept the result if he wins.
The only way they can take this election away from us is if this is a rigged election. We're going to win this election. We're going to win this election.
What's not clear is what will happen in the days and weeks after the election and what his refusal to step down would mean for the Constitution and our country. Today on The Docket, preparing the public for a contested election.
Well, we've certainly had contested elections in American history before. Most famously, of course, the recent example back in 2000.
Deborah Perlstein is a professor at the Cardozo School of Law.
But well before Bush versus Gore, there were three different contested elections during the 19th century. So we've been through it before as a country, but it's never been easy, and it certainly doesn't get any easier.
Does the Constitution actually say something about the transfer of power between presidents?
It certainly has a lot of provisions that have to do with what happens in the event of a contested election or what happens in terms of the election procedures that are followed after the election itself happens. So the election ends on November 3rd, but even after all the votes are cast, it's the Electoral College, of course, that votes for the president. And in two elections in U.S. history in 1800 and 1824, no candidate for president received a majority of the electoral votes cast. And the Constitution provides that if no candidate receives a majority, the House of Representatives elects the president. And then in one election, of the famous Hayes-Tilden election of 1876, the electoral vote winners in several states were disputed. And Congress established a special commission to hear and report on the dispute. Now, there are enormous stories surrounding all of these contested elections, and there's a lot more to be said about each of them. None of them were high points of U.S. history. And it was really unclear at the time what would happen, but it's no doubt that they've happened before.
Well, even in these cases, though, ultimately, have the presidents followed, the law and the Constitution and ultimately accepted the result when it was finally clear? What that result would be?
There, the answer is remarkably clear. And the answer is yes. Every president in U.S. history has ultimately accepted the results. And more importantly, every loser in U.S. history has ultimately accepted the results, even after these truly brutally fought campaigns that ended in overtime, as it were. The norm of the peaceful transfer of power has been unbroken to this time, and it's one of the reasons why so many people are concerned by some of the current president's rhetoric.
Now, the last major fight over election results that many of us can remember was in 2000. That's when George W. Bush wound up winning the presidency after the U.S. Supreme Court, as you've mentioned, ruled in his favor in Bush versus Gore. The case was really about whether Florida should continue a recount of ballots. Is that a precedent that could come into play in this election?
Well, of all the scenarios I worry about in this election, a sort of Bush versus Gore scenario is one I worry about less. One of the scenarios that constitutional and election law scholars worry about is that a state that has a governor of one party, say a Democrat, and a Republican-controlled legislature within the state would report two different slates of electors to Congress. And Congress would have to decide which slate of electors is meant to be counted. And so this is why people start to worry about if questions arise, if the election is close, if there are disputes over the true winner, we might be in for a very difficult December and January.
All right. So with that, let's say Joe Biden does win the election. Donald Trump refuses to accept the result. What happens if it's not resolved by Inauguration Day, January 20th, 2021?
Right. So part of the answer to that is provided by the Constitution, and it's straightforward. The current president and the vice president terms end on January 20th, whether or not a new president has been selected. And the Constitution, and more importantly, an existing federal statute, makes a provision for the chain of succession, of who takes the place temporarily while the question of who gets to be president next is resolved. In the first instance, the vice president, if a new one has been selected, would become president. But if neither the president nor the vice president has been selected, the next in the chain of command is the Speaker of the House of Representatives. So assuming that Nancy Pelosi is reelected in her congressional seat and remains Speaker of the House, the new Congress will be seated on January 3rd, and she would take over, as a matter of federal law, all the powers and duties of the office of president until a new president or vice president is qualified. Now, this is obviously an extraordinary outcome, one that nobody hopes for, but one that at least there's a relatively clear answer in law.
To get back to your article, preparing for the contested election, what many people envision is a stubborn President Donald Trump refusing to leave. What happens then? That's what the average citizen is, I think, thinking about.
Yeah, so there's what should happen and what may happen. If the winner is clear and Vice President Biden, for example, has been elected, and nonetheless, on January 20th, Donald Trump refuses to leave the Oval Office, as a matter of law, the answer is very clear. And indeed, practically speaking, I think it would be resolved very quickly. The Secret Service would remove him for his own protection. I think the more troubling scenario is either if the election still hasn't been resolved or if there is an enormous amount of public protest and contestation. We've seen already the use of private militias or volunteer militias and some indeed acts and threats of terrorism already, the threats against, for example, the Michigan governor. And these kinds of activities, if carried out on a larger scale, are the kinds of things that could really throw the country into a great deal of turmoil. The clearer the law is, I think the less likely we are to see that. But that's the reason why I'm more worried about a circumstance in which the election results are still contested on January 20th than I am about a circumstance in which the results of the election are clear and the process proceeds in the pro forma way that it has dozens of times before.
Deborah Perlstein is a professor at Cardozo School of Law and the author of the article Preparing the Public for a Contested Election, which appeared in the online Law and Policy Forum, Just Security, in July.